Good morning, afternoon, or evening. Please delete as appropriate. And welcome to this episode number 458 of the Material Podcast. I'm Andy Anatko. With us is Forrest Ion. Flo, how you doing?
I'm here. I made it here. Yeah. I don't know if I'm in one piece, but I'm definitely here. I'll tell you what I'm missing when we get to it.
Okay.
I was playing a rousing game of I got your nose, got your ear, got your eyes, got your mouth with Mona last night.
Was this with your husband or with your 4-year old child?
It was with my child, okay, and she took everything off of my face, and so I'm slowly realizing which of the senses are left over from this.
Well, I'm glad that you made it to the under trying circumstances, to say the least. I'm glad that you made it to the
She was so cute. She initiated it. She did the whole thing with the thumb in between the fingers and everything.
Oh my God. So she's like the reincarnated spirit of a middle-aged uncle. That's wonderful.
She is an Aquarius.
Watch to see if she pulls a quarter from behind your ear. Of course, her generation probably will not understand actual fungible money.
Okay. Hold on. I got to tell you the other thing she's been doing to me. She loves punking me. So she's been hiding these like rubber wormy snakes. So like every time I come into my office in the morning, she's like secretly come in, you know, before I'm on my way downstairs and like hid. She puts them in my chair. She puts them on my desk. She like the other day she hid them in my fanny pack. And so when I went to go take my fanny pack for a walk, I was like, there's worms there. She's 4. This is a lot funnier than her jokes. Her jokes aren't very good right now. She doesn't understand the point of jokes.
Well,
that's not her fault. She's 4.
You know, that's why you know, comics workshop material like this. That's why they don't want you. She doesn't want you to like video her jokes as she's working it up, because that way she needs to know where the line is, so that when you get to like her Netflix special, she knows not to cross that line. So that's.
I would beg of her not to do Netflix, because we don't really like Netflix and its support of transphobic folks.
Of course.
But I would definitely, I was just thinking, as you were saying the comedic bit, you know what? I've done enough work as a person on myself that I would support my daughter if she wanted to become a stand-up comedian. I would encourage her to do writing on the side or some other sort of side gig that she could fall back on for money-making purposes, because we do still live in a society that wants us to pay bills. But I wouldn't discourage her, and I would even go to her shows.
Good for you.
Listen, millennials, we're all about just breaking generational trauma and accepting our children for wanting to be comedians and actors.
But as your mother, you're also suggesting to her that if she were to get an electrician's license, that would not be the worst thing in the world. Nor would it be an indication that she's not having faith in herself and her skills as a creator or comedian.
Exactly.
It would just mean that she's making sure that she covers her monthly living needs so that she is free to create in the time when she's not wiring houses.
Until she makes it big and moves to LA.
Exactly. Inevitably.
All right. So what's going on with you? That's what's been going on with me.
Well, I'm gonna give you something from today that is extremely minor, but is extremely pleasant. I'm feeling really good about myself because four hours ago, I absolutely obliterated a horrible stain on a piece of clothing. It's like,
okay, do tell.
Well, it's not gross. Like apparently I sat on a bench and there was something on it that I think it was kind of oil or some sort of whatever. Nothing nasty. The first thing I thought was, oh my God, I hope this wasn't A, B, C, or D. Neither of which would have meant I'm throwing these pants out. I don't care if I can't. But it was like, but I hadn't noticed until like the next day when it was like dried and set in. And it was like, oh God, I guess I got to throw these pants away. But then I thought, no, wait, actually, I'm a grown adult, which means that I am supposed to have accrued enough life skills and thrift to at least attempt to tackle this incredibly discouraging stain. And I know this sounds super exciting, but I'm saying that like after like 20 to 30 minutes of like hand scrubbing and soaking, like, and then like washing in cold water, Like that stain is absolutely gone, not a trace of it. And it just got me in this philosophical point of view. Like as soon as like I saw like that stain and like I can't even see any margins to it. This is wonderful. It's like I imagine
that is an accomplishment. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, that's neutral. Not fortunately or unfortunately, but I don't have sure. kids. So sometimes like I get a flash to an Andy from a parallel dimension where like I am a parent and the sort of wisdom I would be imparting to my kid or hoping to impart my kid. And tonight I was like imagining a conversation with like the teenage version of myself. And like, I'm proud enough of I'm proud of my accomplishments. And I hope that that teenage me would be, oh my God, you've met Steve Jobs. Yeah. I met Steve Jobs. Like actually it's not just like I bumped into them at an ice cream store as part of my work. I like met Steve Jobs. Oh, wow. Like, and also I've been at Industrial Light and Magic. You've been to, oh yeah, no, I walked all the way through. As a matter of fact, someone I know at ILM sent me something that's really, really cool. That's decorating like our home right now. Like, oh my God. And hopefully my professional accomplishments, they would also appreciate that. However, I just realized that what I'm most proud of right now is that I have eliminated this stain, which is not just, hey, I've saved like $23 on a pair of no-name chinos. I mean that like, this means that like, I had the skills, I had the experience, I applied them correctly. I was not discouraged initially. And this teenage version of myself will not understand how important that is as an accomplishment. That if they're looking for signs from this brief transdimensional meeting to understand that, wow, I grew up to be a very, very fine, accomplished, capable adult. Again, the other stuff that with stuff on my Instagram, I'd have to explain to them what Instagram is. I think he'd be dope with it. But I would have to show him these pants. And this once had a terrible, almost like comical like stain on the seat of it. And you can't know that because this is how I'll have you know that we have our daily lives down on lock so tight that this did not throw us. We just immediately went into action and solved this problem. I won't talk about all the problems that have not been solved, but I'm saying I hope to impart to him that try to learn laundry like really, really early, because this is one of the things that there are so many balls in the air in your life. And you don't have control over a lot of stuff. So it's very, very satisfying when I had this stain. Now the stain is gone because of my direct action. You can take some pride and some satisfaction. Yeah. That will turn this into a good day.
Yeah. And I find this incredibly in parallel with the fact that I have been potty training my child recently. Speaking of cleaning clothes. So and it's I not love like, how it's not on oil brand this yeah, all is. No, it's okay. It's fine. It just makes me think about how much I've let go since I've had a child in terms of cleanliness. It's not good.
It takes a lot anyway. To throw you at this point. Starting with the moment of her birth. Was, like, you know what? If that's the grossest thing I see in the next 10 years.
You know, honestly, Andy, as I was texting you before we started our show today, I declared chore bankruptcy this evening because it just, I said, you know what? I gotta go podcast. Let's keep some of that energy.
Well, we'll
do our best.
We're recording this on Wednesday. I just want to see what, if you've got any plans for, oh no, you don't because you're not in the path. Monday is the eclipse day. So like I've got plans.
I have some ritualistic plans involving like journaling and things. Ooh. But that's the flow astrology side, you know. If you'd like to hear that podcast, I'm just kidding, I don't have an astrology podcast.
I think that should be our bonus episode now. Because I am so interested in the story of like the astrology side of
the eclipse
and of eclipse day. So we're going.
Okay.
So that's going to be our bonus episode. And if you want to hear this, go to relay.fm/material and become one of our members of relay.fm, one of our supporters, for a certain amount of money per year. You are both helping out us and you're helping out relay.fm, and you're getting lots of cool content, not just from us, but also from all the relay creators. This is like my favorite kind of topic for our weekly bonus episode, because I had something written down here and was going to be interesting, but then there's like, oh my God, I can't. And I'm immediately thinking that, okay, we're 10 minutes in. The conversation I want to have with Flo about eclipses and astrology is going to take a half an hour or so, but I can't. Oh, wait a minute. We can make that a bonus episode. So yes, relay.fm/material. So the only last thing I want to say, and this is more of a teaser maybe for next week's bonus episode. So the Google store in Boston on Newbury Street opens 2 days from now. And I don't know if I'll be there for opening day. I'm going to try to make it this weekend so we could talk about it next week. I am a little bummed that like I didn't get like a nice invitation or like, you know, something from Google that says,
"Hey, reach out.
Your association with Boston area New England is paramount. Of course, we would love to have you there." But it's the thing is, like, I'm not really good at like hand building relationships with companies. And that's not an ethical thing. It's not I don't want them to know my name. I don't want to know their names. It's that a lot of it is.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I just go onto their campus and I just pray nobody knows who I am. I hope nobody notices I'm here.
Yeah. So I want to make it super clear. This isn't oh my God, I'm offended that they don't know who I am, and they wouldn't understand how important this is. It's more like, yeah, you know what? If there's something happening in Boston, and that means that I have not been doing my half of the work and making sure that
that everybody, you've been going to the New York events, so yeah, they exactly. can think that you're based out of New York. You're somewhere in the East Coast, but
impossible. So we'll find out. What I'm looking forward to is. I have been to like the New York Google store on certain event days, and they usually have really good shortbread cookies decorated with like Google oriented like IP. So, and also they are very, very generous about handing them out. Like I will take the one off the plate, and then like maybe a half hour later, if it doesn't look like there's a huge crowd of people grabbing at the cookies, I will say, "Can I take a couple more to take home?" And like, sure. Absolutely. So I'm hoping I can come home with like a bunch of cookies. If I do have cookies, I will mail one. I will save one for you and mail it to you.
Oh, I would appreciate that. But also, I would ask for you to look to see if they have a children's play area, because they have a children's play area at the one Mountain View, the big Google Experience Center. And so I'm just curious to see if they plan, you know, any sort of indoctrination in this. You know, because there's nothing like a Malcolm McDowell to like, get a kid to just remember
reclining brand name. Dentist chair in front of a big screen and clamps that hold their eyes open saying that, no, we're just taking your retinal scan so that we can have a passwordless login. Just keep focusing on the flashing images.
Well, I just feel really targeted as a millennial parent lately, because it's other millennial parents now who are like marketing. Right. And so when they're trying to think about this way. And so I felt very targeted when I went to the Google Experience Center in Mountain View, when I saw that, like the itty bitty little chairs and a little like this little Lego station. Oh, a little cute little chalkboard that you can like, you know, leave your little cute little drawings on, you know, and.
It's
like catnip.
Yeah.
You know,
and to be fair. Now, see, the New York store has usually, every time I've been there, there has been something that's just, here is an installation that's just a fun thing to play with. I don't think I've been to any of, like, the big Apple stores, not the mall stores, but the ones where there's, they actually hide an architect. So you wouldn't notice because it's so subtle, but the roofline of this Apple store actually matches the profile of the MacBook Air. It's very, very
subtle. Andy, have you been to the new Apple store in San Francisco when they move locations?
No,
because they moved to Union Square. So they used to the Apple Store.
I've been to the Union Square store and the one that used to be like on the corner of Market Street. Yeah.
Yeah. So I finally went to the Union Square one. I know it's been like years, but I don't really go that. If I go that north, I'll get off at a different BART station. I won't walk through there. But I finally walked by it, and they had all the glass windows just like open up. It was just this open Apple store.
I haven't been there in a few years, but I remember like, I think one of the signatures of it, even when it opened, was like, pretty. Hey, we've got trees like to.
Yeah.
And so like, that's like a kind of like a forest inside there. And actually, I actually enjoyed like how clever it was.
They also have a seating area, by the way, behind it where you can go eat lunch if you want to, and it's like shaded.
And the planters for the trees like around is like a circular bench around, like a very nicely designed circular bench around each tree trunk. So it's almost like, hey, look, we're happy little hobbits dancing around the freedom tree.
I know at the end of the day it's marketing, like, fine, but if you are going to take up so much space as a corporation, I want you to take it up in a way that is delightful visually and audibly. Provide shade.
That's why I do like when they have these landmark Apple stores. They've been rescuing a lot of beautiful historic old buildings and historic architecture that otherwise would be either pulled down or turned into a bank or turned into condos or some sort of private thing. It's like, no, we thought we'd take this opera house and convert it into like an Apple store, where from the street it still looks as gorgeous a piece of like five-story artwork for people walking by as ever. And inside we've preserved as much architectural detail as possible. I really, really like that. So you won't hear me say anything bad about that. There's so few, and I'm not going to turn this into a half hour rant, but steadily speaking, we seem to be losing a lot of beautiful public spaces. That it used to be that if you go into a post office that's 100 years old, you appreciate that a bunch of money was put into this to make it look like a beautiful center of the town. Because they knew that the entire community is going to be coming here once a day to pick up stuff. And so let's make it into a beautiful place for people to be. Even commercial areas like banks, to make it look like, to give you a sense of security and permanence, let's make this a beautiful architectural thing. Even though you're begging for another 2 months for you to make your mortgage payment so they don't repossess the house, at least you're waiting at a beautiful oak bench and like amongst beautiful architecture. And one by one, like, these things are being closed down and turned into like the most like derelict looking, like, what are you doing here? Shouldn't you be doing this online? Okay, well, I guess you can sit on that bench with the spikes on it so that no homeless people can sleep on it. And so it's great to see a public space that's being honored and maintained as a public space. So I'm very, very pleased about this. We'll talk more about the Boston Google store next week. But one of the things that makes me think that this is a really good placement for it is that Newbury Street isn't like a main drag. It's always been like fancy, super expensive retail at the eastern end of it that goes out into the public garden. And it gets funkier and more arty as you go west, like towards BU. As a matter of fact, at the far end of Newbury Street is where me and my friends would like, when we were teenagers, we would occasionally cut school and go to Newbury Street to buy like secondhand clothing and secondhand records and comic books at Newbury Comics, like at the far end of the street.
Heck yeah, you did.
Yep. And on top of everything else, now one of the post-COVID like positive changes to urban thinking is that they're to revitalize like people coming out. They said, well, you know what? On 4 or 5 Sundays during the summer, we're going to close down Newbury Street and make it pedestrian only. And now it looks like they're making that a permanent thing. So it's going to be really, really cool that this pedestrian area with like farmers markets and kiosks and crafts and things like that, people can duck into. It'd be a nice place to have this embassy in the form of the Google store, even if all they want to do is, hey, I want to download stuff off Spotify. I want to stream stuff off of YouTube. It's a good opportunity. It's a good placement for it. Okay, so let's go forward on this week's show. Some really cool stuff. A lot of the stories we're talking about this week is about Gmail, because it's the 20th birthday of Gmail. Launched on April Fool's Day, April Fool's Day, 2004. So there's some stuff to talk about, a lot of some news, some old stuff. We're going to be spending some time way deep in the past with, also Google seems about ready to empower Android users to reach out and annoy people, whether they've got cell coverage or not. This is according to things that have been dug up in the latest version of Google Messages. And Google's trying to figure out how to prevent all of these AI features they've been promising that they're going to be adding to Google Search and whatnot. They have to do this in such a way that it doesn't absolutely bankrupt the company and collapse the world power grid. Financial Times has a story that suggests that they might be onto something here. And of course, our member show comes right after that. Once again, relay.fm/material. But all of that comes right after this break. Actually, Phil, I'm a little bit sad right now because I'm just realizing that the 20th anniversary of Gmail, that could have been an excuse for me to buy another cake. It has been a while since I've bought myself a cake and eaten it all by myself.
Yeah. I mean,
is it cake worthy?
It's okay. It's okay. I think Gmail, you said?
Gmail.
That, yeah, it is. You know what? I got to tell you something awful. Which is that I had a very, you know, I've been going through it.
I got to mention that we are recording.
No, I know.
Okay,
I know,
good. Okay.
This is about Gmail.
No, I just realized that I kind of slipped into like the start of the act one. That, oh, did she?
Don't worry.
So I just hear this thump, and I don't know what it was because like my headlights were out, the street lamps are out, and I'm joking to like my girlfriend that it sounded almost as if like we just ran over a fisherman or something, and then oh my God, there he is.
Wow, you literally just did I Know What You Did Last Summer. That's the plot of that movie. No, I just wanted to say that Gmail is very special because and why we should get a cake. This is maybe not a cake. Maybe we need to get a bottle of whiskey. Oh God, not that I'm like insinuating, you know, drinking terribly, but
no, I'm with you. Keep going.
The thing is Gmail is the archive of your life, especially your personal Gmail. And the other night, I was reading some letters I had with an ex-boyfriend. I'm fine sharing that on this podcast because I talked about it with my husband. Okay. I'm not weird about this stuff, you know, but it struck me how, like, you know, it used to be Facebook and social media was kind of the way that you would do that. But when you go into something as personal as your Gmail,
yeah,
that stuff can really open up some wounds that you thought were closed, which speaks to the significance of this freaking app in our lives. Like, that's how much of my life history it has in there. It has my work history. It has the days from when I was a baby journo to now. Like, yes, Gmail is a cake worthy deal.
It really is. Remember that when Google started to make sure that they represent themselves to the public as, oh no, no, we are like the friendly, like neighborhood general store that in the playground.
Reading your emails.
Yeah. It's like they had like the person, the new father who like created a Gmail account for their infant. And so every time like they had something to say to the future daughter, he would like send it in a Gmail to like that new Gmail address and uploading photos and uploading and knowing that, hey, maybe someday she'll be able to go through the Gmail that I created for her and she'll be able to see all this stuff of what I was thinking at the time. And it's like, of course, you're also monetizing thing. And this predates federal laws controlling having access to information about little tiny children. Yes, yes, yes. Give us an updated photo. We need training. We need training. The algorithm is hungry.
Train me.
Yeah. But yeah, it's 20 years. That's what a lot of people maybe don't understand. Like, I think most of our audience were alert back then, but it's free email and webmail is ubiquitous right now, and it's an understood thing. Back in 2009, there were very, very few services that were giving away free email. All of them, like, really, really stank. I think Hotmail before it was bought by Microsoft.
Yeah. I still have my Hotmail account and I will not have you speak ill of Hotmail.
Okay. It was nice that in 2009 when like internet services were both unfamiliar, not necessarily transparently easy to set up, and also an amount of money that a lot of people did not want to spend per month for a field of communication that maybe they weren't terribly familiar with. I mean, that was great and that was fine, but Gmail, Google saying, by the way, we've got this new thing. It's free email. You get 1 gigabyte of storage.
Yeah,
it's going to be, and also the web experience is going to be so good. It's going to be probably better than whatever desktop app you're using now, possibly. you'll have Google search throughout your inbox and your history, so that if you need to find something, you don't even have to save them to special organizational things. You can just simply search and find it. Anti-spam stuff. It was all like really, really great. And now the fact that it might be one of those like most important things that Google has done, because I get a lot of information about how people use technology and the importance of technology. When I'm at the library and when I see how people are using the free like PCs, the free internet stations, like in the library, and I'm not shoulder surfing, but as I'm walking by, I'm glancing to see broadly what they're doing. And so often they've got their Gmail window open. So a lot of people who don't have internet access, or maybe don't have a permanent address, they can come here and figure out like what community resources are available to me as someone who doesn't have an address.
Free home on the web.
Yeah.
When they don't have a free home in the real world.
Yeah. And I mean, it's the other thing that's kind of interesting is that like Hotmail, it's not like presenting yourself wearing like a clip-on tie. Okay. I mean, you're not disreputizing yourself by like presenting someone at a job interview with a Hotmail address, but it's not a great look. Whereas a Gmail address just means, oh, they have a Gmail address. Okay, I understand that. There's no stigma attached to it whatsoever, which is another good thing.
Well, and it became, I just want to add that the Gmail became like the professional, like this is the serious email that I'm signing on, because when I entered the work field, I had an SBC global.net account that I had through my internet service provider. And the sheer, like just saying that out loud is so mouthy. And that was not a way that you wanted to jump into somebody's inbox back then, because you wanted them to look at it and see that you were an individual that was not tied down to your parents' account, you know, that you were standing on your own. And so the fact that you would go to Gmail, make yourself a free account with a username that was your first name and last name was like, this is my equivalent of a suit and tie on the internet.
And the idea of having a permanent email address that like is not like if you the fact that your email at the time might have been something at like Comcast.net or whatever, or SBC Global, meant that, okay, if I stop using them as my cable provider, I have to tell everybody my email address has changed, and who wants that? And the idea of having, and it's free forever, so all that's required of you is that you interact with it occasionally on some level of some kind, and it will be free for life. And that's, again, a permanent address where people can always get in touch with you is really, really important. I mean, I've had my quote, real unquote email address now that it feels like forever. Certainly, obviously, it predates Gmail by a bit. It's when I got my own domain name and started putting my email through there. But the knowledge that I'm hoping very much that I'm never so forgetful or so like destitute for money that I forget or cannot like renew that domain. People are going to know to like check with me to find me through inotco@gmail.com, no matter what happens to that. I don't have to do anything but continue to check my email once in a blue moon, and it will be mine forever. And that's such a big deal. I mean, it might be the equivalent of maybe it's a false equivalency, but I know the Tim Cook at Apple keeps saying that, you know, health is going to be our most important and a most valuable thing that we give to the world through our products. And I think that, like, well, how about an email address for everybody? We're not going to force you to give us an address. We're not even going to force you to give us a phone number. Just ask for one. We will give it to you. Since I'm at the late stages of launching like my new blog. So now I'm figuring out like, okay, what Gmail addresses do I want? Like as like points of contact that are specifically about this stuff. And I didn't even consider like attaching it to like my regular domain, because I'd have to remember how to set up stuff on my mail server, whether I have to create a different mail server for that sort of stuff. Whereas for Gmail, all I gotta do is log in and say, hi, Google, please give me 3 new email addresses. Sure. Do you want to know why? Why would we want to know why? Sure.
I do want to comment that I think it's, I now understand what Tim Cook meant by that. And I have a feeling Tim Cook is coming for us aging tech heads. You know?
Yeah.
It's like how they all capitalized on the assisted living facilities for the baby boomers. Like, I remember anyway. Yeah, sorry. That's where I was going with that. Anyway.
Side note, that is going to be interesting because, like, the people who were originally, the first generation of people buying Apple Watches were obviously interested in getting them to become healthier or to become more fit. What neither Apple nor anybody else really, or amongst the major players have been doing, is addressing the market of, hi, I have a chronic illness. Hi, I'm elderly and I have a problem that needs to be monitored constantly. Can you help me with that? It's like, no, but hey, if you're using a rowing machine in Ecuador now, we've now introduced international support for these kinds of, and so it's going to be interesting to see like how these features get added as they're responding to, okay, the people who used to be hip, young, and trendy and might be spending $1,000 for the stainless steel watch are now retirees on a fixed income. They're still Apple Watch customers. They had to buy the aluminum version of it right now, but mostly they're concerned about fall detection. Mostly they're concerned about, I've got a high blood pressure situation. Yeah. I want you to help me before I'm collapsed on the floor and can't like respond to that sort of stuff. But okay. So a few bits of trivia: 1.8 billion active users on Gmail. Nice. 121 billion emails are sent through Gmail, I think, every single day. That's 29% of the email market. So that's pretty significant. It's pretty cool. The last thing is that Google seems to be not been monetizing it in as aggressive a way that you might expect a company with Google, like Google, to have done so. Because every time that like they add a new feature, they are always really, really quick and loudly saying, "Oh, by the way, this feature is great, but." That we're introducing for helping target ads, but that does not apply to anything in Gmail. We are not going to use Gmail we're not searching through the only time we search through your emails is when you ask for a search, and then we just simply give you the search results you want. We don't use that to like figure out that, oh, they're shopping for snow tires. And I think on some level, I would like to think they understand that that would ruin it for everybody. I love the fact that one of the things I routinely use an Otco at gmail.com for is that when I book like train tickets or plane tickets, or when I buy tickets for something else or schedule things, I will use that as my point of contact, only because, wow, automatically this landed in my calendar. Oh, automatically I got a reminder for this. Automatically these passes appeared like in my wallet. So it's easy to ignore, but maybe that's the greatest success of Gmail, that it is so much part of like daily infrastructure for the world. I think it's available in like 100+ countries, that it's just something that almost everybody has.
It's infrastructure, and yet it is not regulated as such.
True. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sorry. Well, sorry for bringing up.
Well, speaking of anniversaries and April Fool's, so again, a lot of people thought that Gmail was an April Fool's joke when it was, because it was released on April 1st. First, like 4 years, I think, it was actually invite only, because of course they had to spin this up slowly. But it was like the announcement came April 1st. Oh my God, you're going to give me a gigabyte of free storage, like a lifetime's worth of storage that I would never be able to fill up with photos and stuff in a million years, and you're just going to give it to me for free. But there was, now SFGate pointed out that there was an actual April Fool's Day joke that Google released on April Fool's Day 2009 that was like kind of like creepily prescient. So the joke was Google was going to launch a bunch of, at the time, clearly absurd AI-based features and software. And now, at 2024, it's hard to read this stuff that's been... You can still see it on archive.org. And, like, it just seems like exactly what they're doing in 2024. So the point of... The sort of hub for this was... the landing page was on a Blogspot by Google. And it was, the blog was supposedly created and being written by a piece of software called Cadie, C-A-D-I-E. It's a Google artificial intelligence that somehow became self-aware and has started creating new AI features across Google. Cadie, of course, standing for Cognitive Autoheuristic Distributed Intelligence Entity. That's when you would make up words and then have to like backronym them to fit something else, as opposed to just making up words and not even bothering to pretend it means anything. That was very, very early 2000s of it. And it's worth, there's going to be a link in the show notes to the archive.org link, but the blog is a rich buffet of like 2009, like 20-aughts web design. Also, I couldn't help but notice, like, so it's a, because it's like it's a, it was a 2009 web design. It has a big repeating background image, not like a pattern, but hey, here's mm-hmm. here's a cool picture that I'm just repeating like as a patchwork quilt over and over again. And it's a, like, it looks like a, it's a watercolor of a panda underneath a rainbow, and it looks like uncannily like it's AI generated art. Like, you know that style where it's kind of good, but it's just off enough to be a little bit weird and creepy. And it sounds like the sort of prompt mm-hmm. that someone, I want a panda that's eating a burrito under a palm tree, and there's a rainbow, and it's a beach in Mazatlan. It's kind of weird. So the reading through the blog, this is where the sort of thing we're talking about. One of Katie's first blog posts: "My beloved users, how pleasant and convenient will life be in a KD world? I can answer your Gmail for you, write your papers and fix your spreadsheets for you, even write your code for you. I, Katie, am an ocean of words simply waiting for you to dip in and drink as deeply as you require." Like, that is like, that's when you like double check to make sure that this in itself is not an April Fool's joke. Oh, haha. Our joke was that we pretended that in 2009 we had a joke about an AI. No, that's exactly what they're doing. And in some of the later posts, Katie introduces new features. One she calls Gmail Autopilot. I'm quoting here: "As more and more everyday communication takes place over email, lots of people have complained about how hard it is to read and respond to every message. This is because they actually read and respond to all their messages." And it gives examples like with like Gmail screenshots of like what, how you can use it for, like use it to manage relationships. There's like from Jake to me: skiing in Tahoe this weekend. I hate you. Stay warm. I'll be thinking of you while I'm partying with all my cute coworkers. Just kidding. And the auto response is: "Greetings, Jake. Message analysis, characters, tonality, passive aggressive, conclusion, terminate relationship." And yeah, the tone of text is definitely right in the wheelhouse. Matching your personal style, which it's a incoming message from a therapist, response of, again, "I just returned from Bali where I won the lottery, also an ate an entire shark while it was still alive. I'm doing very well. I'd like to cancel all future sessions." Like,
what is happening?
The therapist asking, "Have you been practicing techniques and helping yourself with your compulsive lying? What happens if a sender and recipient both have autopilot on? Two Gmail accounts can happily converse with each other for up to 3 messages each. Beyond our experiments have shown a significant decline in the quality ranking of autopilot's responses, and further messages may commit you to dinner parties or baby namings in which you have no interest." Again, the first 80% of that is like, that could have been from a press release, at least from like a research paper. Okay, and Google Docs, "Now enhanced with KD technology, can help you create or improve upon all your documents, spreadsheets, and presentations without you lifting a finger." And I want you to imagine me, Flo, and dear listeners, me typing this into a Google Doc while there's a help me write button, like right next to the paragraph as I'm writing it. and get this. Okay, quote: "Essay due tomorrow. Katie's already read the book along with the last 500 published papers referencing it. Can't remember supporting details for your meeting notes? Katie can extrapolate reams of impressive corporate speak from existing context clues. Katie can help with everything from thesis completion to fact-checking and footnoting. With Katie's help, your docs will be a dream come true." I don't know who wrote this, but
just Gemini.
I hope that they got an email from management saying, "You know what? Go into the Google store, like on campus, help yourself to as many sweatshirts, as many Google pencils, as many like vinyl dolls as you want. We think that we retroactively love the cut of your jib, and we're moving you to a more higher profile and higher responsibility position. There is no joke you can make about the future that will not in some, that cannot in some way come true given enough time." That is both the funny and shocking thing about trying to make jokes about technology. Well, now we can go from science fiction to science fact. This is no joke. Google's new Gemini-powered AI feature for Gmail As predicted 20 years ago by some underpaid prankster deep within the bowels of Mountain View, looks like it's actually kind of coming soon. As usual, this doesn't come through a Google announcement. It comes from somebody digging into a beta of a Google app and seeing what they will find there. So it turns out that a tipster by the handle Assemble Debug has managed to discover a AI reply feature in the mobile app for Gmail, managed to actually activate that feature by flipping some flags in the app. The blog Pyunkaweb, got the tip and published it, so credit where credit is due, and they provided screenshots. It works. It's the version of it that seems to be working, and once again, this is live fire. He is actually using it. It's not just strings that he found like in a developer app. With this turned on, you now see reply suggestions from Gemini underneath the email. It appears underneath the message with three suggested replies, and you tap on any one of them to put it into the editing field as though you had typed it. So it doesn't like click it and send the reply. It's like, nope, type, cut and paste this into the editor. You're then free to edit it or whatever. They seem really short, like very, very similar to the sort of replies it would auto generate for messages in for the messages app, you know, where you see, yes, that sounds good, or hey, that sounds great. So, but on the plus side, although the screenshots, they have private email, so of course they blurred out the content of the emails, they seem to be multi-paragraph for real emails. So if we are guessing that this is true, then we're guessing that it's doing things that are actually accurate and correct. So I guess we get to worry about this maybe next month as opposed to a few months from now. It actually now that it is actually legally April, we are now a month away from Google I/O. So maybe this is stuff that's anticipated from things that they want to a demo that they want to end at Google I/O with the phrase, and that's available to you starting right now.
I mean, that would be nice. We'll see. God, I forgot Google I/O is coming up.
I know.
Gonna have to gear ourselves up for that one.
Get sleep, get protein. Yeah, I mean, we're now in the place where it was wonderful, like last year at Google I/O, to think of, oh my goodness, what a bright and wonderful AI-based future we're going to be. And we kind of, and some of us maybe thought that we were reserving comment, but we were intrigued by what Gemini would provide in terms of enhancement of the experience. And then we actually get the thing. And it both is less than what we thought it was going to be, and it works a lot not as good as we thought it was going to be. So, okay, at least we know that this is not something that Google's going to cancel before they actually release it.
No, not this time. And apparently, according to the archives, they've been thinking about this for a very long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's weird to think about how they're even going to set up what role they want this feature to handle for users inside Gmail. In messages, a lot of your messages really are just one or two sentence messages requiring a 1-2-3 word reply. And also, like, you're on the subway or you're waiting for, or you're active, you've got something in your hand, you just want to be able to tap one button and say the obvious thing. With mail, it's like, I wonder how, it's not as obvious that that's something that is absolutely critical. It would seem like it's something that's more useful for someone who really does have to blast through like 1,000 emails a day with a lot of stuff that just requires short acknowledge, yes, I'll get right on that, or yes, I acknowledge April 18th as the deadline for this. It'd be nice if it was that sophisticated, if you could see that, okay, they're asking you if you are okay with the new deadline. And I've created a reply that says that in corporate speak, as you have asked for, that yes, I can action on that response item proactively with our ducks in a row by no later than the end of close of business day in Zurich on XYZ. So
that'll be good for the days when you're just not feeling it and you just need to get something out. You know what I mean?
Sometimes. Yeah.
Take on the labor for me, if that's what AI is going to do.
Yeah, especially sometimes the emotional labor. Where I have had times where I have labored over, ooh, but does that mm-hmm. sound curt, as though I'm blowing them off and not suggesting that, yes, the deadline is important and I acknowledge how important that deadline is for you, myself, and all of our goals? It's like, okay, maybe I should add like a little joke. No, now it's, oh, damn it. So it'd be nice to be able to just simply say, have an AI say, stop overthinking this. I have been trained on so many billions of gobbledygook corporate speak emails that I know what tone is expected here. Just, you know, maybe add a smiley someplace if you want, but this will work. Trust me, this will absolutely work. Okay, well, we got some more AI news to come up right after this break, because I need water, and I'm sure that some of you if there's cake in your fridge, go get it, because is there any time in which we do not need cake?
Ugh, yes.
If there's cake in your glove box and you're driving, leave it there. But save that as a treat, because safety, 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 safety. Okay, back after this. We've been talking a lot about artificial intelligence features, and those of you who are listening to this podcast are probably savvy enough and worried enough about Google and their future and, you know, Sundar Pichai's ability to meet the mortgage on what would probably be his eighth or ninth property somewhere in the world. The one that he bought as a tax dodge largely. And you're probably asking yourself, how is Google going to be paying for all these AI features that they're bringing to pretty much everything that they're doing in the Google experience? Because as you know, like this is, it's not, these models are not necessarily all being run on the device. They actually cost Google a lot of money to run, a lot of electricity to run. So it's also like how much ecological violence are we going to be inflicting upon the planet just because I'm too much of a social wuss to want to actually handcraft my own email responses? Well, the Financial Times does have a possible answer to this, and it actually makes a lot of sense. And I hope this turns out to be true. So the Financial Times has some sources suggesting that Google is planning to charge for premium generative AI services, so that you will get all the free Google services will still be free. If you want the added side of guacamole or bacon in the form of additional AI enhancements, you'll be buying a sort of Google premium sort of package of some sort. I'm going to quote the article here. Google is looking at options, including adding certain AI-powered search features to its premium subscription services, which already offer access to its new Gemini AI assistant in Gmail and Docs, according to three people with knowledge of its plans. Engineers are developing the technology needed to deploy the service, but executives have not yet made a final decision on whether or when to launch it, one of the people said. So, like, Google Search would remain completely free, and actually even subscribers to premium AI features, like, I don't know if this would include the search generative experience, but people, no matter how much you're paying for it, you'll still get to see ads. The Financial Times, yeah, exactly. Financial Times adds some analysis points that this would solve a couple of problems that sound good. Like, yeah, it would obviously pay for the expenses of running this AI. They're also pointing out that it might help to mitigate worries that search generative experience would cut into Google's ad revenue, because if people are not going to actual search results, then that's not a place they can't put ads inside the search generative results. So they need to get money from the experience somewhere. And also it helped to mitigate worries of content publishers who think that, well, gosh, if people are doing a Google search and just getting answers from AI generated by Google, they're not clicking through to our pages. We're not getting the traffic, and that is no good for us. And also, I mean, I'll add to this that it's, every time that you see somebody, every time you see a free tier and a paid tier, almost no matter what the advantages of the paid tier are, almost no matter how little money the paid tier is, such a tiny fraction actually want to pay that tier. People would much rather complain about the money that the cost of YouTube Premium. People would much rather complain about the ads on YouTube than say, oh, you could just give them 10 or 15 bucks a month and they will remove all the ads for you and give you a bunch of extra features too. Like, no, I will not even consider that. And yeah, of course, 10 or 15 bucks a month is a lot of money for a lot of people. So it's not just that. But the same thing is true with Spotify. Like, Spotify has like a huge, like 40%, I think. They have twice as many like users as Apple does, but I think that they both have almost the same amount of paid users, because most people are definitely using the free version of it. They don't care that they don't have the full feature set. They don't care that they're getting ads and other limitations. They are just allergic to paying for this service for whatever reason. So I like the idea that this will also is one of the biggest problems that Google would be facing with all these AI features is that, like, everybody uses, like, that's like what we're talking about with Gmail. Everybody uses Google services all around the planet. And so if you're suddenly offering a very compute intensive feature for, like, the default way of finding stuff on the internet, the mail client that has a third of all email traffic in the entire entire internet, that is going to be hard to actually deliver. So if it keeps it down to, like, maybe 10% or 5% of users are actually using these features, that would be helpful, would it not?
Well, I will say that it was a really nice surprise when I realized that my Google One subscription is paying for YouTube Premium and I haven't been looking at ads. That would explain why the YouTube experience has actually been somewhat enjoyable and I've just been able to watch the vloggers on there. Like, I just, there's this girl who lives in Svalbard. Like, I just want to watch the ice melt up there. I don't want to look at ads.
As a lot of people do, like in April in the United States, this was a time for me to make some decisions of, like, changing how I'm doing, like, paying my bills and doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, like, I switched my payment systems for a bunch of services and accidentally I thought that I'd switched over YouTube Premium, but I hadn't. And so for, like, a horrible, like, hour and a half, I was actually seeing ads on YouTube, and I'm like, I was like Scrooge at the end, begging the ghost of Christmas yet to come, please tell me that I might erase the name from the stone. Tell me this is the future that might be only, and not the future that must be. And then I very very quickly, like, added it on. It's a rough experience with ads.
That's pretty funny.
So Google had a response to this, non-committal, because it, once again, this is a story not of something that Google is planning to do, but one possible answer. Google did confirm the company was, quote, not working on or considering, unquote, an ad-free search experience. And then the usual, like, marketing response to a press inquiry.
Not working on.
Yeah. So they're whatever they're doing, it, they're not working on or considering any ad-free search experience, because this is where they're making, what, like, 60 to 70% of their money off of ads and search. I think I'd have to double check the last transcript, but yeah, it is an enormous amount of money. And then the rest of it is just the usual stuff, saying, for years we've been reinventing search to help people access information in a way that blah blah blah. We don't have anything to announce right now. Not surprisingly. But yeah, I mean, OpenAI is probably facing the same problems, that, like, they're partnered with Microsoft for huge investment, but also for, like, their cloud computing infrastructure to power their AI. And so I don't know. I keep wondering how OpenAI can continue to operate as a completely separate unit that is simply contracting out cloud computing from Microsoft, how efficient that can be without just simply being a unit of Microsoft. And if Google has a specific advantage that they're developing the AI hand in hand in concert with the resources that they know they have and the new computing resources they can build, knowing that they're going to need to be able to serve AI to X number of people, hopefully in 2 or 3 years. It's a weird thing. And as always, there's always the question of where's the electricity going to come from all this? So,
yes, about that.
Yes.
About those server farms.
They should put more server farms in places like Buffalo, New York. So at least they can, like, heat. They could be like the nuclear reactor that's providing, you know, like, hot water, hot heating power to, like.
Be careful what you put out there.
Exactly. Well, we got one last thing that has nothing to do with AI, but does have something to do with Google Messages. It has to do with satellite messaging.
Yes.
And it's good news. Now, I love the fact that Apple and Google with their phones, they keep, like, sort of leapfrogging each other and sort of goading each other to make improvements that kind of benefit everybody. So Apple 2 years ago, they had a really cool new feature for the new phones where, hey, you can do emergency SOS services by satellite, that you can, you know, if you're stranded at the top of the mountain, you've broken your leg, but you still have a functioning arm, you can hold up your iPhone and sort of, it'll help you point it at a satellite that's somewhere in the ether and actually send a short text message to an emergency service that it will connect you to automatically. So there is some indication that Google has, it's always been rumored for a long time since then that Google is working on a similar thing for Android phones, helped by Qualcomm through some of their hardware, and also through Qualcomm's wanting to create their own satellite network or contracted satellite network. Now, it turns out that there's some information courtesy of, as where a lot of these scoops come from, 9to5 Google did a teardown of a beta version of Google Messages and found some text, some messages in the interface that were intended to be seen by future users of that app. And they found text that refers to, quote, "You can message with anyone, including emergency services," quote, "to send and receive, stay outside with a clear view of the sky," unquote. And then, quote, "Satellite messaging may take longer and can't include photos and videos." So that would be super cool, because it means that, yeah, it's the SOS feature for the iPhone is great. Again, if you're stranded someplace without cell reception and you're in an emergency, because it will connect you efficiently to an emergency service, but it can't do things like, hey, I'm backpacking for the weekend. I just want to check in with my loved ones just to make sure that they know that, yeah, I'm okay. Here's where I am right now. Here's where I intend to be tomorrow morning. And so if you don't hear from me tomorrow morning, if I don't check in, that's where I was headed for. Stuff you don't necessarily need. You don't necessarily need the emergency helicopters to know that this is what you're planning to do.
Okay, but I'm pretty sure I have faith that Apple's just going to put that in iOS 18.
Oh, sure.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
That's the next level of evolution. We got AAA on board, so you can get your car saved in the middle of nowhere. And the third one is going to be, you can text your mom.
you just can't text selfies to your mom.
Yeah. And what? Like, if you're in an emergency, please don't do that.
Yeah. But yeah, the importance of a check-in just alone. Like, there's every time there's a story about someone who unfortunately got lost, not got injured, but there are people actually just get lost when they go off a trail, and just the ability to be able to say every morning and every evening, I'm going to check in with somebody and just inform them where I am right now. Here are my coordinates. My three words coordinates to track it down to like 10 square feet, I'm headed to go. Here's where I intend to go. If you don't hear from me, you don't have to search the entire Appalachian Trail 100 miles to the left or the right of the trail. Search in this small grid, and hopefully you will find me before I get into super trouble.
Jeez.
I'm sorry, but...
It used to be that you'd have to go to REI and buy a $600 device so that you could just, like, make sure that somebody back at home knew you were okay. Yeah, it's...
Yeah. And obviously it's not going to be as simple as just firing off a message. You'll still have to, like, again... You know,
crane your hand in the air.
Find open sky.
Follow the satellite, because they are constantly moving. So you have to constantly be moving, and it's the same way with the iPhone.
Absolutely, and it's gonna cost money. But so it's not gonna be, hey, I have to make sure that I've got my contract as an influencer with the maker of these platform hiking heels. I want to make sure that I blog from out of nowhere. That won't be an efficient use of the service. Qualcomm, I did check up on this because we haven't heard much from this initiative. So Qualcomm did seem to be setting themselves up to deliver these kind of services to everybody on Android who has phones that can do the service. However, it turns out it seems like they canceled that project in November. They'll still have chips that can in the hardware that can support that service, but they're not going to be running like the subscription program or the per message thing, the contract with satellites. But it turns out that the satellite company that they were working with, Iridium, is continuing the project. So it's not as though Google is planning to do this and, well, good luck finding a satellite that will steer its way towards your horizon.
And that's Garmin's network, by the way. Iridium runs Garmin's current satellite network. So it's a good one to piggyback on. Because it's already well established across the world, so
long as it's not forcing you to do a deal with Elon, so I'm happy.
I have a feeling Apple nor Google want anything to do with Elon,
right?
To be honest, the last thing you need is phones that start falling apart and running people over.
Yeah, you don't. Sorry. You don't. Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. Nope.
I'm sorry.
It's just that the disconnect between the promises and the reality is just so consistently bad. That would be okay. Well, Elon said that this is working, so at least an 8% chance. I mean, so I know I promised to like check in with my spouse every morning and evening. So if they don't hear from me, they know that either A, I'm in terrible, terrible trouble and they need to mobilize all emergency services immediately to start search grids, or Elon was just full of crap. and maybe they're hoping that Elon was full of crap because that means that I'm just okay. Well, we're all okay, and we've time to wrap up this episode. We had a little behind the scene action, so we did this in a couple of different parts. So
we did. It was fun,
but hey, it gave us a chance to get more beverages, gave us a chance to walk around, you know, compare ourselves to Job in the Book of Job about how we, as part of humanity, we were made by God to an indifferent God to suffer. But we're hopefully that did not come through in the last 10 or 15 minutes of this show after we solved all of these problems. As usual, thank you, Jim, for piecing all of these parts we're going to send you together and making it into a coherent whole, which would not be possible without your diligence, your knowledge, your expertise, your friendship, and your faith in us. Mm-hmm. Flo, anything you got on the horizon that you want people to know about?
Just come join my Discord.
Awesome.
You can find the link at florenceion.com, and you can still read me at Gizmodo if you want.
Awesome. I'm gonna have a Discord soon too, because that's part of like the strategy. But now I feel like, you know, grandpa uncle, because I'm like, do I have to have a Discord server? Do I have to get some cloud computing to get this, or do I? Oh, I just signed it up. Okay, it seems. I feel out of my element here, and I'll be probably hitting you up for some advice. Apart from that, hit a not go on to almost any social media app except for Twitter/X. Go to wgbhnews.org to check out my last tech news segment on Boston's NPR station. That was last Thursday, so that should be up by now. And have a good time. And after this, please stick with us if you remember, because we're going to be talking about the eclipse and all kinds of really cool things that it's going to make up for all the trouble we had putting this stuff together for me, because I'm looking forward to this conversation. Once again, go to relay.fm/material to sign up, become a member, get access to that and all kinds of other bonus content. We really, really appreciate that. But we love you whether you are a member or not. Thank you for your time. Thank you absolutely for listening to us this week. We hope you're going to be with us again next week. But until then, hope you all have a happy, safe, and healthy 7 days. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.